You may know my next guest from a very big and landmark climate change review in the late 2000s. It was commissioned by a recent guest on this show, former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. His name is Professor Ross Garnaut. He's among many things, but he's from with the University of Melbourne. He's also just published a very interesting debate sparking book called Reset, Restoring Australia After the Pandemic Recession. It's a great pleasure to have him on the show. Ross Garnaut, welcome to the King Review.
Hello, Gavin.
Now, recently you were writing about the book, promoting your new book, and you said that, quote, talk about returning the economy to normal after the crisis is misguided. Before the crisis, normal was nowhere near good enough. Could you just explain to listeners? I mean, we hear a lot about before the pandemic, Australia experienced 28 years of uninterrupted economic growth. So just talk to us about why you think that normal isn't good enough.
Well, we did have 28 years without a recession, and that was a great thing. No other developed country has ever done it. We've never done it before in our history, and no developed country has ever gone 28 years without a recession. That was terrific. Recessions are really bad from every point of view, including living standards of ordinary Australians. But it wasn't a uniform 28 years. In the book Reset, Restoring Australia After the Pandemic Recession, I break it down into three periods. The first decade, roughly 91 to 2002, I call the productivity boom, when we had very strong economic growth and growth in incomes based on our best performance in productivity growth relative to the rest of the world we've ever had. The second decade, incomes kept growing till about 2012. And I call that the China resources boom. Productivity growth wasn't strong. It was very ordinary, but incomes grew because the world's biggest economy grew stronger for longer than any economy ever had. The world's most populous economy, most people, China, grew more strongly for longer than any country ever had. The most resource-intensive growth any country had ever had, and that lifted prices for all of our exports and gave us lots of investment in the resources industries. That was a good period for Australian incomes, but it was based on the boom for demand in China. The third period I call the dog days. That was 2013 to 2019, till the eve of the recession. We kept growing in total output. You measure whether you've got a recession or not by whether the total output of the economy is growing. Well, it kept growing, but real incomes of per person of Australians didn't grow at all. For the bottom half of the income distribution, the poorer half of Australians, they actually fell back. Very unusual in history to have such a long period of stagnant incomes. Unemployment didn't fall. It was stuck at 5 point something, when in other developed countries it fell during that period. In the US, they started in 2013 with unemployment a few percent higher than us, and it fell to 3.5% in 2019. We were just stuck at 5 point something. And underemployment grew and grew. You're counted as being employed by the Bureau of Statistics. If you worked an hour in the week before the survey, well, a lot of people were in work but working less hours than they wanted to, and the number working less hours than they wanted to kept increasing. So we don't want to go back to that. We've got to do much better than that, and we can do much better than that.
Now, one of the most interesting and I guess debated concepts that you raise in the new book Reset, which I find fascinating concept, is this idea of some form of basic income. Now, I guess just quickly for listeners, just give a quick rundown of what your proposal. What is, I guess, a universal basic income? What is that concept for listeners? And then we'll dig into whether that's ever possible here in Australia.
Well, I call it Australian income security, it would bring together the tax and social security system, so you just have one system. And every citizen above a certain age would get paid into their bank account every fortnight, a basic payment equal to the unemployment benefit. The basic payment will be higher for categories who now get more under Social Security, like people with disability, aged people, and payments for dependents, that they would all be part of the basic income. And then you wouldn't lose that when you start to earn a modest amount of income. You wouldn't get it if you had a high income, and that'd be very high by Australian standards.
I think 180,000 or something.
And you wouldn't get it if you had a lot of wealth, like millions of dollars. So you might cut out 10% of Australians, but everyone else would get it. And you'd be taxed from the very first dollar of income you earned. You wouldn't have the tax-free threshold, but you'd be taxed at a moderate rate. And I put in a couple of examples, 137% rate, 132% rate. The budget costs of the lower rate are higher. That takes away the poverty traps. At the moment, if you're on Social Security and you work more than a certain number of hours, work more than earn more than a certain very modest level of income, you start losing your Social Security payments. And a combination of that and the separate taxation, once you're above the tax-free threshold, can take away nearly all of the income you earned. In some cases, can take away the lot. So
that disincentive, that's almost a disincentive to
work. And it might be one of the reasons, I think it is one of the reasons why so many Australians now are in part-time employment. Take away that disincentive, you'll have more people wanting to work. Not much more than a guess, but I say in the book that I think that we'd probably expand labour supply by a few percent. That would make the whole economy much bigger, and that would go a significant way towards paying for the change. It costs a lot to introduce, but you'd get a fair bit of that budget cost back as we return to full employment. And I'm talking about real full employment, not the the artificial artificially high unemployment and high underemployment that we had during the dog days.
And the concept of a basic income, is that too radical for any Australian government or opposition, for that matter, to ever consider? Does it happen in other countries? What's the actual likelihood of something like a basic income, which is it's a massive leap in public policy for Australia. What's the likelihood of something like that ever really being considered?
Oh, that's up to us, really. We're a democracy, and if there's a strong view in the community that something should be done, the great thing about a democracy is that becomes influential in policy making. We've got, in the dog days, right through the century, we've got used to policy being determined not by the public interest, but by vested interests of various kinds. It's one of the reasons our economic performance has been so bad. Why we tolerated high unemployment and stagnant incomes. That's our fault. There's no they in Canberra in a democracy that stops good policy being implemented. It's up to us. So what are the chances? Well, that's the same thing as saying, what are the chances that Australians will start thinking about the public interest rather than giving up and acting as if they're an authoritarian system where people have no control over policy.
Now, just finally, and I know that you're flat out and you have to run, but the concept of a green economy, to put it simply, just talk a little bit about that in the context of a regional area, and obviously we're listeners here in Cairns and far north Queensland. I understand you and your wife spent about 9 months in beautiful Barcaldine in central west Queensland during the pandemic. How can regional economies, regional cities, be it Cairns or wherever in regional Queensland or regional Australia, How can we make this leap to a new type of economy that you've spoken about over many, 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 many years? What can a city do, and who should lead that to really transform our economy? You're obviously doing a lot of work in the solar space, for example. But what are some things you'd like to see regional cities do in this space?
With friends in the Central West, we're working on some transformative things. In a world which is heading towards zero emissions, so that's the world we live in, every developed country except Australia is now firmly committed to zero emissions by the middle of this century. That's only 29 years away. And China, our biggest export market, is committed to zero emissions by 2060. In that world, it will be a huge advantage to be able to make energy more cheaply than other countries, and we're top of the league ladder in opportunities for low cost energy in the zero emissions world economy. Solar, wind, you've got plenty of that in the vicinity of far north Queensland. People say the sun's not always shining and the wind's not always blowing. Well, you've got great opportunities for pumped hydro in the mountains leading up to the Tablelands, where you can store power by pumping it up to a higher dam when the sun's shining, the wind's blowing, and running it down through a hydroelectric generator when it's not. So regional Australia generally, and certainly far north Queensland as part of that story, can be one of the low-cost energy producers in the world. That gives us a huge advantage in every kind of manufacturing that uses energy. And Townsville, in that situation, can be a great industrial city. We've also got a great advantage in our opportunities for storing carbon in the landscape and growing biomass. And the coast of Queensland is just fabulous for growth of biomass, been used for sugar in the past. Well, all of that bagasse is a very that's left over after you've got the sugar out is a very valuable commodity in the zero emissions world economy. We won't be making plastics and petrochemicals out of coal and gas. We have to make it out of biomass, and we've got millions of tons of it every year as a basis for new industries. We should be the low-cost producer in the world of a lot of that sort of thing. So the zero emissions world economy, making use of that is great for Australia, but it's especially great for regional and provincial Australia.
Well, on that hopeful, visionary note, you're right. I think it's very, very exciting. It's great to have someone of your stature on the national stage and really pushing these ideas. And I just hope that we continue to debate them. And as you said, in a democracy, the people need to lead that change. Professor Ross Garnaut, a great pleasure to have you on the King Review.
And very good to talk to you and the people of Far North Queensland.